Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
From Providence, Rhode Island, in the Minute with Mary studio, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners, let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I love the fact that Harry just kind of goes along to get along in this chapter.
Yeah. Okay. Like, elaborate.
There's a serious moment where Harry should be questioning his legitimate sanity. And he's just like, oh, well, either Ron's playing a real joke, or, you know, he really can't see it. You know what? Okay, sure. Let's just keep going.
You know, we got it. Like you said, we've gone through so much already.
Yeah.
I'm just grateful to actually be somewhat in the vicinity of Hogwarts.
Good point.
So it's totally, totally okay. So, of course, friends, we are here talking about Chapter 10 in the Order of the Phoenix. None other than one of the most beloved characters gets her own chapter named after her, Luna Lovegood. And I would be remiss if we didn't end it with what I think is like the most popular popular quote of this chapter.
Okay.
"It's all right," said a dreamy voice from behind Harry and Ron. Oh, Harry, as Ron vanished into the coach's dark interior. "You're not going mad or anything. I can see them too." "Can you?" said Harry desperately, turning to Luna. He could see the bat-winged horses reflected in her wide, silvery eyes. "Oh, yes," said Luna. "I've been able to see them ever since my first day here. They've always pulled the carriages. Don't worry, you're just as sane as I am." Smiling faintly, she climbed into the musty interior of the carriage after Ron. Not altogether reassured, Harry followed her.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I feel like this is one of those, like, is that good? Like, is it good, though?
Yeah.
Is it? Like,
and
of course,
Ivana Lynch, who portrays Luna Lovegood in the film version, nailed this line.
I totally agree.
So incredibly wonderful. She just, you know, "You're just as sane as I am."
You can't help it. You can't help but say it just
you
like
can't.
That.
You can't. She does it so sing-songingly, and it really just gives you the feels, and I feel like it was captured so beautifully in the films and obviously here in the book. And You just shake your head for Harry. Shake your head for that poor guy. Well, all right. On that note, let's get into the show.
"I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good."
For those of you who just listen along but don't necessarily reread each chapter, here is your recap. In Chapter 10 of Order of the Phoenix, Harry and the Weasley family are heading off to the Hogwarts Express. It's a bit of a chaotic morning. We've got loads of people bringing them to the Hogwarts Express. And then Harry sits with Ginny and Neville on the train where they meet Luna Lovegood. And they talk about the Quibbler. And Ron and Hermione have all their prefect duties going on. And Harry sees the Thestrals for the first time with his own eyes. All the feels. There's lots of big feelings in this chapter. Lots and lots of big feelings. And this, of course, is This is the, I assume this would be September 1st, because this is going back to Hogwarts Day.
Going back to Hogwarts Day. Yeah. Man. So it's apropos that we're doing this podcast on the day that we're doing it, which is cool. I don't know. I think it's fun.
I agree. And I think it's fun as Harry Potter fans to enjoy September 1st. We all kind of think of it as a mini holiday. No matter what day of the week it would land on, September 1st was the day that you would go back to school in this magical universe. And of course, it's different for most kids. You know, you generally go on a weekday, not necessarily a weekend. But I think that having this day across the fandom to celebrate going back to Hogwarts on September 1st is just so fun.
Yeah, I totally agree. One of my favorite things, actually, just for Hogwarts, let's call it Hogwarts Day, is when people gather in King's Cross in real life on September 1st and they wait for Hogwarts to pop up on the screen that shows all the different things. I find it fascinating that as a people we kind of allow ourselves this little fantasy moment, you know, for all of us. Like even the fact that King's Cross is like, yeah, okay, cool, we'll do this and it's
people come
thing.
Like in their robes, their house robes, thousands of people. It's a big deal.
I love that we're able to do this and like get together and celebrate these absurd kind of things.
And it's not
like,
only on that day, just so you know, in case you're planning a trip to London, they do it September 1st through 3rd to allow a little extra time. You can have butterbeer, play games. There's all kinds of fun stuff that happens. So I just think it's
kind of
really neat.
It kind of reminds me of like Groundhog Day when people go see the groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil, and you know, the, is he going to see his shadow? Like, it's just utter nonsense, but it's great to have these little flights of fancy where we can look into our lives and derive whatever meaning we so choose to take from it. It can unify people in the best ways. I have this real romantic feeling about it, you know. It's just fun.
I also just love that Harry has a pretty much uneventful ride on the Hogwarts Express again.
Granted, I mean, well, there is the questioning the whole sanity thing.
That's after, though. Yeah, that's after he's gotten off the train.
But still.
But you think about the Dementors and, you know, when Draco jinxes him in the next book. Like, all these other things happen to him. The flying car where he completely misses the train.
Good point.
So for him to have an essentially uneventful Hogwarts trip on the Hogwarts Express. Yes, it hasn't been his best start to his year yet. Yes, he does get covered in disgusting sap in front of Cho Chang, but it's okay because nothing's out to kill him on this train right now.
And I think it's also good to be reminded that this is still kind of wee Hogwarts. You know, like, a little bit, you know what I mean? I know that we've already gone to some serious stuff, and I know that we're questioning sanity at the end of this chapter, but the fact still remains that this is a kid in his early teens. He's 15, whatever, years old.
Yeah.
And he likes a girl, and he doesn't know what to do about liking the girl. And it's just that awkward time when you're figuring yourself out, and of course you get sprayed with this stuff when you see the girl. And it's good to be reminded that these are still kids, even though the world is much bigger, the stakes are getting much higher, and it's becoming much darker. At the same time, you can still get some whatever it's called pus all over your face and then have Jenny clean it all up.
Mimbletonia, I believe. Right. Well, we start this chapter off actually in a dark note. It's Harry having bad dreams yet again.
Yes.
And this has been an ongoing thing for Harry, having bad dreams. But this one in particular, he has his parents weave in and out of his dreams, never speaking, which it makes sense because, lest we forget, just a couple months ago, he saw his parents in the graveyard.
Right. And that he saw Cedric die.
Exactly. Like, so we've got that going on. Then he sees Mrs. Weasley sobbing over Creature's dead body. Well, obviously she was sobbing over all the dead people with Boggart. And then we have Hermione talking about, you know, all the elf rites. He sees Ron and Hermione who are wearing crowns.
Yes.
You know, and we can debate, you know, is Harry jealous that he's not a prefect? Or is it just they're on this elevated thing that he is not allowed to be on? And then he saw himself, of course, walking down a corridor, ending in a locked door. So he still hasn't put that two and two together where he might have seen it. But the poor guy. I mean, the day before your first day of school, and granted, it's not his first day of classes, but it's the day he goes back to school. Nobody ever sleeps easy the day before a big travel, big trip. You know, if you've got an airplane or whatever, and it's like, you got to be at the airport for 5 a.m., you know you don't sleep well. You don't fall asleep till 2 a.m. if you're lucky.
And then you wake up at 3:30 because you're like, am I going to miss the thing? You know?
Our little lad today, the day of recording, is actually our kid's first day of school, which is just perfectly fitting that we're recording this episode. And our little lad earlier today woke up super early. He did not know what time he woke up. And I had told them, please don't wake up before 6:45, which is early. Okay, we've got elementary kids. So when I went downstairs at 6:45, he was already fully dressed. Bed was completely made. He had on a hipster bohemian felt hat that he has now figured out looks kind of like Indiana Jones's. And he had a whip. Indiana Jones whip. And he was whipping toys off of his desk in his bed. He said he was having target practice.
Yes, well, and that's how one does with
obviously,
a whip.
Obviously, and the first, you know, you're going back to school. But all this to say, like, his genuine excitement and bundles of nerves about, wow, this is my first day back at school, woke him up extremely early. Maybe he did have the intent, I'm going to wake up early so I could practice my whip skills. But which he's got, his skills are good.
They're not bad.
I got to say, for a little like target Indiana Jones whip, kid can nail it right now. Harrison Ford would be proud. But, you know, just this is what I walked down the stairs to.
Well, how could, you know,
be whipping things around.
No, you need to have this playing in the background when you're whipping things.
I thought I was going to be like Mrs. Weasley, getting the kids up. Hurry up, we got to go. We slept in. Nope. Came downstairs to a whip and a hat.
Indiana Jones.
We have Fred and George, who, because of the rush, think it's really smart to bewitch their trunks and send them downstairs and knock Ginny down two flights.
I love how Mrs. Weasley's just like, you could have killed her! What are you doing?
This was such an amazing example of a household
real life
with multiple children on the last day before the kids go to school.
Right. Who don't care about nothing?
People were asking Blake and I, how are you guys doing this week? We're like, we are surviving. We are surviving on Cheez-Its and grapes, okay? And ice cream for dinner at this point.
Occasional movie.
Yes, yes. So you can just tell. I mean, we've joked about it before about what Mrs. Weasley likes to do when she drops off the kids at school.
Doritos and melatonin. Oh, see you later.
She's stopping on the way home. One of those muggle stores.
She's going to the Packy.
No. Anyway, so then Mad-Eye, we get downstairs and there's a whole bunch of the order down there. This is not just your regular show on up to Hogwarts Express or get yourself a handy dandy car.
Yes.
No, we have to have guards. And Mad-Eye's talking about, oh, Sirius isn't here. Oh my gosh, he's late. Oh, whatever, you know. And I don't feel good about this because we were missing a friend all last book. Come to find out she was dead. Okay,
D-E-D.
Bertha Jorkins. Oh, Bertha's missing again. You know, like, you'd think that there'd be a little bit more.
Yeah, when somebody just randomly goes missing, you'd think that, like, hey, that Bertha, she was croaked last year. Maybe we should put a little bit more effort into this one. Not, oh, he just didn't show
just
up.
No care.
He didn't show up for his shift today.
Oh, my goodness. This is, you know, second time we've brought him up. Like, what are we doing? Where's the alarm, friends?
Yeah, that's a lot.
Anyway, so they end up going to Kings Cross, walking on foot.
Yes.
With their trunks. All of them. Can't, they can't have the magic. They can't be doing any of this stuff with Harry. Correct. And Molly's all mad. And then to top it off, Sirius decides to join in dog form.
Which, I don't blame him. Of course I would join in dog form.
Dumbledore said no.
The person I take, pardon the turn of phrase, the person I take a little umbrage with in this scene is Molly.
Oh my gosh. Stop it.
I take a little umbrage with Molly, and not because she's being a bad mom. In fact, I would say she has every right to be like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But this is Sirius Black,
yeah,
and she's saying, hey, Sirius,
okay,
maybe you shouldn't be a dog right now.
Okay. I thought you were upset with her being upset, because I completely appreciate her being upset. But I agree with you.
Like,
why are
this
you throwing around
of,
his real name?
This is in front of an entire community of wizards, and she's like, Sirius, stop being a dog. Lest we forget, this is still the most wanted man in all of, like, wizardry, if you will, or wizard land. It's Sirius Black.
And we know that Wormtail has gone back to his master,
right,
is hanging out with all the Death Eaters.
Right.
So he's definitely said, Sirius Black, by the way,
yep,
can change into a dog. We see later in this chapter that Malfoy knows, Draco Malfoy knows, hey, dogging around. Like, we know that he knows.
Yeah, but does he, though?
Yes. You will, yes.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Okay.
So they know. And this is not good.
All right, yeah, so
pardon
here me.
He is just jumping
forget.
Around.
I forget.
It's okay, baby. We forgive you. So, like, in general, the bad guys know you can shapeshift into a dog.
Yes.
And that you're probably hanging out with Harry Potter. Now, they're going to see you jumping all around with him, making Harry laugh by chasing squirrels, like, doing all this stuff. Okay, just further solidifying that Harry cares about you. So as we see Voldemort place these visions of Sirius in trouble, yeah, it's because we know that Harry likes him. He's just got
right.
pictures of this little happy dog jumping all around. And then, like you said, Molly just said it all out loud for the world to hear. So all in all, Sirius coming was wrong. And Molly not saying, I mean, she, even if she used his code name of Padfoot, like, the bad guys know that name as well, too.
Sure.
So
I the thing is, too, the fact that Sirius kind of bounds up and gives Harry a hug, mm-hmm, that's still dog-like to me. Like, our dog does that to me all the time, where she, like, bounds up and puts her arms out and...
Yeah, but all the Death Eaters know that Sirius Black transforms into a big black dog.
Fair.
So here's this big black dog hugging Harry! Harry, who lives with Muggles!
Oh, man.
Nope. Not okay. Not okay.
Like, what are we doing?
Bad choice, Sirius. Bad choice.
I don't know. I feel bad because, you know, Sirius, I'm sure, has been stir crazy to some degree, being in that house the entire time. And he finally gets a chance to just kind of be out in the open.
No, I mean, you appreciate it because we would all want it. We would all
yes.
be having the cabin fever. So I totally understand. But it's obviously, it stands out. We already have Harry standing out because he's got the whole flipping order. He's got Mad-Eye Moody. He's got Lupin. He's got the Weasleys. He's got Tonks with him. Like, they have a whole thing going on.
Yeah.
And you kind of feel bad. Like, you know how when kids are around this age, you know, the younger teens into teens, how sometimes they want the parents to drop them off outside of the school?
Oh, yeah.
Even though every kid's been dropped off either by a bus or by a parent or
yep.
by somebody, but like, no, I don't want them to see me. No, you have a parade, Harry Potter. You have an entire parade of people,
Moody's
two of whom
there.
Are previous teachers.
Yeah, good
Lupin
point.
Was your old teacher, and
good
now Mad-Eye Moody, granted he was faux Moody, but
like, still, nonetheless, was contracted to be a teacher.
So as if Harry didn't already feel cool enough, the last everyone knew, he was talking about seeing dead people, like
right.
Sixth Sense.
I see dead people.
Okay. Now he's being brought to school in a parade of previous teachers, all of whom don't have their jobs anymore.
Right. They've
okay?
all lost the job.
Yeah. Goodbye. Good luck.
Lupin's a werewolf. I don't know. Did you ever, as a kid, like, tell your mom or your dad, hey, drop me off, I don't want people to see you?
So I had a bus, Blake.
No, no, but any way you go, like if you went to a friend's house or like, I don't know, like if you went to the mall, like.
I mean, I assume I probably did at some point, yeah. But I don't really.
I don't remember doing that.
I do remember the opposite when I started dating. I wouldn't let the boys come in and meet my parents. I would just run out the front door.
Fair enough.
Which made my parents so upset. And now that I'm a parent, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I would just be like, bye. And they'd be like, who's picking you? Who is that?
I'd be like, oh no. I don't think so. Bye. If my little ass ever does that, forget about it.
Oh, she probably will.
She guarantees she will. I will bar that door.
Okay, so Harry comes in and he can't.
Not getting out of here, are you? Like, just like Vernon Dursley. Oh,
yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Not going to see your silly friends now, are you?
So Hermione and Ron, speaking of silly friends, they're prefects. So sad.
Yes.
Because Harry, when he's traveled to school, has always done it with Ron.
Yeah.
And this is,
and even, I mean, to an extent, I would say just as much.
Oh, Hermione's been a big part of it, but like Ron.
But Ron from the start.
Yeah. Anything off the trolley.
Yeah.
No, my mom packed lunch. Like from that moment forward, to Fort
we'll
Anglia.
We'll take the lot.
we'll take the lot. Okay, you know that Harry was pumped to take the lot again.
It's the cards you want.
Now he has to get it for Looney Lovegood,
right.
Covered in sap. Don't want to eat this food covered in sap. No, don't you worry, Dina Fash. Ron does come and eat the frogs. Still, Ron shows up in true Ron fashion and eats the food when he comes back from his prefect duties.
Oh yeah, of course.
But Ron and Hermione leave, and they go get their new, you know, the lay of the land, and they find out that Pansy Parkinson and
Draco Malfoy
are also prefects. Thoughts from you, Slytherin. Why would Snape have chosen these two? Because it's the
because he knows that Draco, he's got an in with Draco. I don't know about Pansy Parkinson, because up until this point we don't really know anything about him. But definitely Draco. And there's also some narrativium in here too, right? You kind of have to, I think, have Harry Potter's nemesis on the school level in this position of power.
Really?
Absolutely. If you don't have Draco in this position of power, you're not taking advantage, I think, as a storyteller of the kind of tension that you need, right? The very fact that not only, and it works so well, not only is Harry already questioning if he deserves it more than Ron, I wouldn't necessarily say Hermione, but he's already questioning himself over this. But then to add in all of like the knowledge about Draco and what he means as a mirror against Harry and putting him in a position of power over Harry, making that another obstacle for Harry to kind of move around and find ways. Even if nothing ever comes of it, right? He's like internally as a character, he still has to figure out, okay, how do I make my way around this? And what do I do around Draco? This kid could actually kind of take advantage of this thing. And then here's some other subtext to it all too. At the same time as all of this, as a character and as a reader, we kind of have to figure out what the value of being a prefect really is, if Draco Malfoy is a prefect, right? Because we have to assume that Snape picks him for his own particular reason. My thought would be, well, because there's an in with Draco. He knows Draco will listen to him, so on.
Okay.
But as Harry and as a reader, should we put any weight into this notion that Draco is a prefect and what the prefect really means?
Great question. I say yes. So we see Draco through Harry's eyes.
Yes.
Right. Only Harry's eyes. And it makes me think about people who maybe I didn't like growing up in school, how I always saw them just one-dimensionally. You know, I didn't see them as full people. I didn't really take into consideration who they were at home, their feelings that they might have had. If they did wrong by me as a child growing up into high school, Very rarely did I change my opinion of them. Mm-hmm. Still to this day. I actually, there's a woman who has children of her own, and I've seen her a few times, and we belong in some social circles now together because of kids stuff. And I have to remind myself that this is not the girl who made fun of me because I had poor clothes in fourth grade. Like, I resent her still.
Oh, yeah.
As a 41-year-old woman, I still don't like this woman because of how she treated me in elementary school.
Sure.
And then I had those thoughts about her in junior high and in high school. And I have no idea what she went through in life. No idea whatsoever.
Sure.
And she's been nothing but nice to me now in adult life.
Sure.
Like, actively, like, even came to a music class with her kids of mine, is trying to be nice. I'm being nice, but I'm saying it is so hard for me to rewrite that narrative in my head.
Yeah. I do the same thing. Like, if I see somebody from my past life that was not nice to me, mm-hmm. you are automatically dead to me.
Unless, like, you had other experiences. But if that was it, no, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's people who you have a rough start with, and then you get to know them.
And then it's okay.
And then it's totally okay. But if you don't get to have those reset buttons, those moments, and Harry never got that with Draco. Now, I'm not here to say that Draco is an angel, because we all know that he's not. But I'm here to say Harry had bad experiences, and he, with his friends, have now made it up in their mind Draco is always bad news. And obviously, Draco's bad news for a while. Because
well,
of his
I think
family,
he's kind of earned it.
But yes, but we've also talked about how Draco is an only child, how his parents, like, this is the life he grew up in.
Sure.
Kind of like if you'd grown up in a very racially charged house, or in a house that has, like, super, super staunch beliefs where you judge other people and you're cruel to other people, but that is all you knew.
Sure.
That is what you were praised for when you did things like that. It is really hard to become your own person. And I think, obviously, in the series, we do see little glimmers of Draco and his parents changing things in that moment. Old, but I'm here to say we don't know much about Draco aside from the fact that he has influence over others in his house.
Yep.
He is on the team.
Yep.
And he's good enough that, like, he gives Harry a run for his money. So he is athletic. So, in my opinion, Snape may have chosen him. Yes, you know, okay, it's Harry's nemesis. But also, like, Draco has sway in the Slytherin house. People look up to Draco. People listen to Draco.
Sure.
And Draco cares about his house points.
Yes.
Draco does try hard at things. He is very ambitious. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to keeping people in line, or, hey, you know, let's do this so we can get more house points, I understand why he would pick Draco.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I heard you allude to it, and I just want to address it when you said, oh, like, Snape chooses Draco because he's Harry's nemesis. Yes, I was referring to that, I think, on a sub-level, but mainly I was referring to that in terms of the author and what having Harry's nemesis does for the story overall, as opposed to it just being character motivated, right? Like, it's a thing that causes a tension that helps keep the schoolboy, schoolgirl, wee Hogwarts aspect of all of this still planted and firmly rooted into
FOMO
the story.
FOMO, too, okay? Yeah. Like, not only did Ron and Hermione get it, but now you don't get to ride with them for the whole train ride. And even someone like Draco got it. You know, I'm like, Hannah Abbott got it! Come on!
Right.
You know?
You know who didn't get it? JFF.
Oh, Justin Finch-Fletchley.
Because he sucks.
No, he probably, like...
Maybe he transferred
bless
out.
Bless his sweetheart. Yeah, maybe he transferred out. I'm going to go to a muggle school after all,
after that whole snake incident.
Snakes suck.
What you getting at?
Well, think about it. There's snakes everywhere with all the Slytherin stuff. He probably has, like, PTSD moments. Poor thing. Poor Justin.
Kid sucks.
So,
goodbye.
Stop it, Blake. Oh, my God. Be like a school with spiders all over the place.
Might be
for
the
you.
Worst character
Stop.
In all of Harry Potter.
Oh my God, you are the worst character in Harry Potter. But I just think that when you get to kind of delve into the depth of it, and he's like, it's not like they would have made Crabbe or Goyle, right?
Right.
They can't even read.
I thought you were going to say Crabbe Rangoon. I have no
I
idea
love
why.
Crabbe Rangoon. But it's not like they would have chosen those.
I
kind of
want Crabbe Rangoon now.
So interesting. All right. So we go on the train, and Harry's go to friends aren't there.
Yes.
And he's got Ginny, and he's got Neville, and then
B team.
Well,
it's BT.
Yes,
it's BT.
But also he's hung out with Ginny all this time, and, yeah, and it's okay. But Neville to him is definitely BT. He doesn't. He does not yet have a full appreciation for Neville. But now he's right. He spent 4 years with him in school, so they're totally friends.
Yes.
I mean, they listen to each other fart in their sleep. So, you know, someone toots in their sleep every once in a while. And they're in that room together. Good thing you have those curtains around your bed. So. Even Neville doesn't want to sit in the compartment with Luna.
Oh, my goodness. That just shows you how much Luna... I think the whole introduction to Luna in this chapter, and even in the film, too, is pitch perfect. You get an absolute sense of who she is, what she's about, how she commands herself, what she believes in, and the kind of character she is right up front.
It's so funny because... You know, there's this pecking order when in life, but particularly middle school and high school,
yes,
of coolness, of popularity. And you and I have both you and I have both said, like, we were not part of the popular crowd.
Oh, I was the
whatsoever.
Farthest thing from the popular crowd.
However,
crew.
Were you bottom of the rung? Like Diary of the Wimpy Kid, the guy like labels like where people are, and he at one point goes on the very bottom. I will tell you, I never thought of myself as bottom of the barrel. I never thought of myself as the least popular person in my class. But I will tell you, things that made me look at those people, like people who would pick their nose and eat it openly in class, like
sure,
in front of people. Like if you were like eating boogers in class, I would be like, at least I'm not that unpopular. Like I'm not that odd. When now I'm like, oh my gosh, Mary, like what a jerk. Like this kid was probably just like, you know, just socially
right,
unaware or like
or had,
emotionally.
Didn't have a diagnosis that probably
exactly
should have. I could definitely think of at least two kids that should totally have not,
yes,
or should have been in a, had a different circumstance for themselves.
And so it was nothing
school.
For me, it was like it wasn't necessarily about their intelligence. It wasn't like,
yeah,
if you were in smart classes or you know anything like that set you differently, but it was more like these social norms and how you looked.
Sure.
If you'll be picking your nose and eating it, to me I'm like, well, at least I don't do
so
that.
I was a step above the nose picker.
Okay,
I'll say that.
I feel like
but
Luna,
it was a very small step above the nose picker.
I feel like Luna is the nose picker. Luna is the...
She's the weird girl. She's like a step above the horse girl.
No, like, stop. Normal people don't have horse people, so we don't know what that means. But I'm
no,
saying this
you
because,
all know who I'm talking about.
Because, you know, when I was in school, like, I tried to be very kind to everybody. I
yes,
really would.
Yes.
I would ideally try to be sitting with my friends if I could, not
yes,
next to the nose picker. But I appreciate
the smelly kid.
But I appreciated that, like, the smelly kid was still a kid in my class, and if there was nobody else to sit next to, I would go sit next to that person.
Yes.
And I would talk to that person.
Yes, I would say that I was friendly with the nose picker or the smelly kid.
Yes.
Because as someone that got made fun of,
yes,
I knew that I didn't get made fun of nearly as much as they did.
Yes.
And I felt bad.
Yes.
So like when they would be around, I wouldn't say I'd be chummy, but I'd be like, I'd be nice to them because it's not fair.
No,
right? Like,
yeah.
That sucks.
And I think too about, you know, when you're put inside different environments and in class when you have to do group projects.
Yeah.
Same thing. Like in the beginning years, you'd be like, oh, I hope I'm with the popular kids in this. And then, you know, the teachers know and they mix everybody up.
Yeah.
And truth be told, the popular kids never gave me the time of day. Mm-hmm. And they were not often great at group projects.
Right.
And then I had my peers who obviously I worked well with because they were my peers and my friends. And then, yeah, you'd occasionally get paired up with the nose picker, the Luna Lovegood.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully... And for those of you who are still in school, hopefully you give them the benefit of the doubt because these are still lovely people too who just don't have the same cultural...
they don't have the same awareness
yes,
that
you
like,
may...
you do or...
Or that may be a social... Like
a cool
standard
kid
right
does,
now.
Yeah,
well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like we look at Luna and... Neville didn't want to sit next to her. Neville, who I would have thought was the nose picker of his group.
I wouldn't characterize him as a nose picker.
See, now he's moved up in the world. He's basically the Marion Blake.
Yes, he is absolutely Marion Blake.
So Neville at first is like, oh, but no, we can't go in that one.
He's the
and
kid that
Ginny.
I would bring my Starship Enterprise to school. People would be like, does it do anything? And I'd be like, yeah, loads of stuff.
I mean, Neville even refers to himself as nobody.
Yeah.
You know, when Luna's asking, like, who are these people? And Neville says, I'm nobody. And Ginny's like, no, you are not.
Yeah, that is very much a Blake thing.
And I loved
totally
that
agree.
Ginny did that. She was like, no, you are not a nobody. I don't think so. And of course, they end up going to the Yule Ball this year. So Ginny really helps. Yeah. I think this is a big chapter for Ginny because she helps bridge this gap. No, of course, we're going to go sit in here. This is Luna.
Yes.
You know, She makes sure that Neville also feels confident about himself. And if you have young ones in your life, using Luna and Neville as examples when you're talking with your kids for
Ooh,
those other kids is going to be a big, big help. You know, we talk to our kids about how, you know, are there children who sit alone at lunch? Are there kids who other kids don't want to do group projects with? We need to see them potentially as the Neville or as the Luna in your class. And as you see in the books and in the stories, it just takes that you need to get to know them a little bit different.
Right.
Yes, Neville's got his Mimbletonia that just... you know, Mimbletonia, excuse me.
Say that five times.
Exactly.
Fast.
Who, like, other people don't necessarily get, but there's nothing necessarily wrong with that.
Yeah.
That's what he's passionate about. You know, his Mimbleness, Mimbletonia is my Harry Potter. There are plenty of people
sure.
who are my peers who probably shake their head and be like, yep, Mary loves Harry Potter so much that she does a podcast about it.
Right. We have an entire, like, section of our house dedicated
yes.
to Harry Potter.
Yes.
That's not wrong, ladies and gents.
So, you know, using these things in your life where whether it's you looking at who do I right now kind of treat in my head like a Luna that I don't want to sit next to, or if you have those, as I said, if you have children who know the Harry Potter series, ask them who's in your class. Who do you think, you know, maybe you don't use the words cool or popular. Like, we don't usually like to use those
no.
words, but who do people like to sit next to? Or
yes.
who do you think is really friendly? Or, you know, questions like that. And then you get to find out the other children's names. And then, you know, challenge your children to be the Ginny.
Yes, to help out the Luna.
Challenge yourself to be the Ginny.
Yeah. Help the nose picker. Yeah, or even help out the Marion Blake, right? Help mm-hmm. help out, you know, the person. I would absolutely consider myself of the same social status as Neville when I was a kid. You know, because I was into weird stuff. Like, I was into things that nobody liked. It wasn't cool at the time to be into Star Trek or Star Wars. It wasn't cool to like the Beatles. Like, it wasn't cool to do any of that at the time. But I did because that was me, and my social status probably paid for in a big way. But you're right, Mary. There are people who are, you know, we're 40, 41 years old now, and if I see somebody from that time period of my life that I never had a chance to, like, kind of make it right with, or they ever made it right with me, I will totally hold it against them. And I still do. I'd be like, dude, we're not buddies.
Isn't that so hard?
I'm not your friend.
It's like something you have to work on in your heart.
Yes. And I see, because I'm Slytherin, I refuse to work on it.
Oh.
And I'm okay with it. But it does go to show you, if you are a younger listener, be nice to everybody.
Be
seriously.
The Ginny.
Like, you don't got to be best friends with everybody. You don't, like, just be Ginny. Just be nice. And don't make fun of people just because other people are doing it. Like, It does have ramifications in your life. You may not be aware of it. You may not see it. But I remember something my dad used to tell me, which was, everybody's always watching you.
It always feels like.
Yeah. But, like, always. Everybody's waiting for you to make a mistake. And everybody is watching at all times. And as I get old, I remember thinking about that when I was younger and being like, wow, yeah, like, That's, I guess so. And I tried to comport myself in that manner. But as I get older, it's 100% correct. Everybody's watching at all times. Just waiting for you to stumble, waiting for you to...
God, you're so negative.
But it's true. And you'll get recognized when things are great, but they're especially waiting for when things aren't so great. So you have to comport yourself in a manner that's just be nice and be caring and be cool with people, because making fun of others or whatever, putting people down for the sake of doing it, it doesn't get you anywhere, and it just causes problems. And I can tell you the other thing, Mary, and even though I'm not, you know, the Harry Potter in my life, the thing that would totally happen is if I liked a girl and the girl just happened to come into the room, it would absolutely happen that a plant would just shoot its excretion all over me.
Liquid squirted from every boil on the plant. Thick, stinking, dark green jets of it. They hit the ceiling, the windows, and spattered Luna Lovegood's magazine. Ginny, who had flung her arms up in front of her face just in time, merely looked as though she was wearing a slimy green hat. But Harry, whose hands had been busy preventing the escape of Trevor, received a full face. It smelled like rancid manure.
Ugh. Yep. Poor kid. Poor kid.
Sorry, Neville gasped. I haven't tried that before. Didn't realize it would be quite so. Don't worry, though. Stink sap's not poisonous, he added nervously, as Harry spat a mouthful onto the floor.
I will say that this is one of those scenes that the movie would have benefited from.
Agreed.
Because, again,
we get the Mimbleness and Mimbletonia in Neville's lap,
yes,
in the carriage, and he's got it. So we've got these little shout outs, these little things. And to me, that's the way of them saying, we can't do it. This is already the longest movie.
No, it was the shortest movie.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah, it was the longest book.
Yes, longest
but the
book
shortest movie. Yeah, I think this, and this is definitely one of the things that I want to do as it relates to this book, is pick out small bits.
This is what I want in the show. I want Mimbleness, Mimbletonia in the show.
Yeah, that help characterize or help give our characters characterization. Like, we already know the kind of person Neville is, but it would have been nice to have the characterization for Harry and Neville, and then the interaction with Cho, the whole thing. With this little scene, because it helps brighten the mood at the beginning portion of the movie, mm-hmm, right? And one of the things that I think the movie gets wrong in this chapter of the book is it shows Luna holding the book upside down.
Magazine, the quibbler.
Oh, you know what I mean. Yeah. But it never actually explains why she's holding it upside down. Right.
Yes.
And in the book, we end up figuring, like, even I forgot that she's reading runes that you had to, like, turn upside down, mm-hmm, and like, and that's why she's doing it. In the film, it makes it look like she's holding it upside down because she's weird. And that's one of those things that when you see it on the veneer, yeah, it is weird. But when you look at it and you understand from the book, oh no, she's doing it for a reason. Yes, she appears like she's bananas, but there is still some truth to what she's doing. And I think also that is somewhat metaphorical for the Quibbler in and of itself. Right? Because mm-hmm, on the outward appearance, the Quibble is just nonsense. I mean, we're talking about fudge, putting goblins into pies and, you know, whatever. But there always seems to be some sliver of truth to what the Quibbler is saying.
Yes. And it's just teaching people to, like, challenge things and to have different voices. And what's cool about it is that, you know, when Hermione puts it down, oh, you know, that's the Quibbler. Basically, it's rubbish. Luna could have been wary due to her social status, mm-hmm, and just stayed quiet. She could have said, oh, yeah, you're right. It's crap. She could have said, oh, my dad writes it and I have to read it every time, and done one of those, ugh. But instead, she stands by it proudly.
She absolutely stands by it. I wouldn't say she stands by it proudly. I think it's more of a statement of fact.
Well, here it is. Okay. So, anything good in there? Asked Ron to Harry as he closed the magazine. Of course not, said Hermione scathingly before Harry could answer. The Quibbler's rubbish. Everyone knows that. Excuse me, said Luna. Her voice had suddenly lost its dreamy quality. My father's the editor. Oh, said Hermione, looking embarrassed. Well, it's got some interesting, I mean, it's quite... I'll have it back, thank you, said Luna coldly. Leaning forward, she snatched it out of Harry's hands. Rifling through it to page 57, she turned it resolutely upside down and disappeared behind it just as the compartment door opened up for a third time.
So, I mean, would you get that? Would you take from that she said it proudly, or would it be like, would it be defiantly?
Yeah, defiant, being protective. I would see it a bit as proud.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, like, don't mess with me. Don't mess with my family. My dad's the editor. And then she takes it back and goes back to reading it.
Yes.
So to me, that's all really standing up and being proud. That's how I took it.
Yeah, I would say, if I were to put a word to it, I would say defiant. Mm-hmm. They probably exist in the same world.
Look at us as a Slytherin Gryffindor. All right, if I stole it back, it would be because I was proud. Yeah, but if I stole it back, it's because I was defiant. Yeah, same thing. Same
it's
thing.
It's not
to
the
us.
Same.
No, I'm saying like in our hearts, yeah. The feelings it gives us through the zinging in our blood would probably measurably be the same. And to anyone in the carriage along with us, if we did the exact same motion, they wouldn't be like, oh, Blake was totally defiant, whereas Mary totally was proud. Like, they probably would look the same, but in our hearts,
yes,
that's the feeling that we're giving. So we need a Ravenclaw to write to us.
Yeah, what does that mean in your context?
Because to me, I would have been proud of that. I'm proud of my dad. And flipped it back over and gone right back to my runes and just didn't talk to these people, but then still be nice and say, I'll hold your owl at the end.
Or if I was a Ravenclaw.
That's what I'm saying, Ravenclaw. But you're not even close to Ravenclaw.
No, not at all. But if I was a Ravenclaw, knowing the traits that a Ravenclaw has, perhaps I look at it like, well, Hermione, it clearly shows that you're an idiot. Like, yeah, you're the one that does the whole stupid... I was going to say swamp, but spew thing.
Swamp.
And here you are turning down this runes, and like, you don't even know what you're talking about, dude. Like, who are you to judge this? Like, you just totally throw an entire publication under the bus just because it's been labeled as rubbish. Mm-hmm. That's nonsense. So perhaps that is what a Ravenclaw would think. But I would love some Ravenclaw nerd to write in and tell us, absolutely, Mary, what you think that would be. But I will say that it does show how, even though she wants to be open-minded, Hermione is still a little narrow-minded.
Yes.
I mean, regardless of the fact...
She's no Ginny.
Yeah, regardless of the fact that, whatever, the dad's the editor, who cares? This person clearly is reading this publication... In front of you.
She's smart. She's in Ravenclaw.
She's enjoying it. And you're like, yeah, it's garbage. No one reads that crap. That's a waste of time.
Okay, prefect.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Like
it's Hermione being Hermione.
Yes, absolutely.
And she has got to get her priorities.
Oh man.
It's interesting to note, of course, you know, we talked about the Mimbletonia and Luna being, you know, quote, not cool. And yet next year on the train, Harry is proud to be in a compartment with Neville and Luna. We're gonna see this. He gets interrupted again. And it's interesting. It gets interrupted, I think, by Romilda Vane. And yet there is no being embarrassed by him about who he hangs out with. So I think that's a neat thing.
Yep, I agree. Of course, then we get to the whole Thestrals thing, Mary. And, you know, we kind of already talked about it here a little bit, so I don't want to go crazy with it. But, I mean...
No, we have Ron and Hermione come back down.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. They talk
true.
About the prefect yeah. things, talking about how we're going to dock points with each other.
And like, you know, Ron automatically jumping to the point of, I can't wait to get Crabbe and Goyle.
And Luna, by the way, thinks Ron is hysterical.
Oh, yeah, this is one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about.
Hysterical.
Am I supposed to get from Luna in this chapter a little bit that she kind of likes Ron?
I kind of do. Or she just finds him funny. And I like this because it's like, to me, it's a little confidence boost for Ron Wanwan. He gets his prefect badge. And now he comes back. I mean, his friends are used to
his jokes.
Yeah, but
the nose picker likes him. I feel like when the nose picker likes you, you're kind of like, that doesn't say too much about me. I think the bar's kind of low at this point.
But
it's a real entry-level compliment.
You know, she, I don't know, because then she puts him down. She's like, oh, yeah, and you went with Padma Patil.
Oh, yeah, and she didn't like
it. But she did not like you.
But she does
say. But then she says, I think I would have liked to go with you.
Yeah, because I wouldn't want to dance either way. That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like she puts Padma Patil down to boost herself up. And to be like, Ron, you kind of made a bad choice because if you went with me, I wouldn't have cared. I'm just saying. I'm throwing it out there.
Oh, my gosh. That was funny. Her prominent eyes swam with tears as she gasped for breath, staring at Ron. Utterly nonplussed, he looked around at the others, who are now laughing at the expression on Ron's face and the ludicrously prolonged laughter of Luna Lovegood, who is rocking backward and forward, clutching her sides. Are you taking the Mickey? Said Ron, frowning at her. Now, I didn't know what that phrase was.
I know what Mickey is.
We only know Mickey Mouse.
Well, no, I know Mickey as a drug, but I don't know what. I don't know what Ron's referring to.
I looked it up. It's a common British slang, and it means, are you mocking me?
Oh, okay.
You're making fun of me.
All right, fair enough.
Are you joking with me? Yeah.
All right.
That's what that means.
You busted my book.
Yeah, yes, yes, Blake, exactly. For you classy people like Blake. And then, of course, like you said, we now get out, and we're going to the carriages, and this is when Harry sees the Thestrals.
Yeah. This is a, I think narratively, this is a really big deal. And it's good that we had a lot of this kind of fun stuff to balance this out. Because when you look at this, like, yes, it's kind of played off as a joke later on. And we get to kind of laugh about it when Luna says that he's just as sane as she is. But it's still kind of scary that Harry sees these things, which are very foreboding in their exterior look. And like their representation of death. And here he is saying, like seeing these things as they are. That is scary. And I think, Mary, we also have to have the natural conversation here, too, of, all right, did the author make a mistake when it comes to Harry seeing the Thestrals or not?
I don't think she did. Harry was a baby when his parents died. I don't even know if he was looking at them, you know, at his mom when she died. I don't know if he was like, oh, eyes on eyes. So I think that this is okay.
Yeah, I think I would argue, Mary, and I don't think it's too much to frame this way. I think you kind of have to have a concept of death to understand the ramifications of death, mm-hmm. right? And if you understand the ramifications of death, then you are able to see Thestrals, right? If you see it firsthand, which I think would explain why he sees it later on as opposed to when he was a baby, because he just didn't have a concept of death and thereby didn't understand the ramifications.
Yeah.
And even when he does know that his parents died, it's kind of like a myth. It's like a story. It's not real. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So no, I agree. I think that the way that it is with how the author has done it. And I especially love that it's Luna who gets to explain the Thestrals to Harry in the future.
Yeah.
Just we've gotten to a point now that they get to be peer teachers. We have lost faith in a lot of the teachers here, and the peer-to-peer interaction and learning from each other and learning from each other's life experiences from here on out is going to be just as worthy, if not more.
Yes. All right, Marvin, you got anything else to say about this lovely chapter of Order of the Phoenix? Neither do I. I think we're in a good place. Mary and I do have a hot out right now, so we have to go take care of a couple of things, and then we're going to hopefully get on to the next episode real soon, and we'll do the different perspective. And I know we've been promising the listener feedback here for a while now. We just haven't been able to get to it. So, all right, yeah, Marvin, if that's it, want to close it out?
Sure.
All right, cool. Let's do that.
We want to thank you all so incredibly much for taking the time to listen to this podcast episode, and especially for those of you listening in live time, for your patience as we are making way into the school year, with it being back to Hogwarts Day in just a couple of days and back to school day for here, us and the Larson family. Just know that our regular schedule of having episodes coming out is going to be coming at you soon. To make sure that you are always aware of when episodes come out, head to maryandblake.com. There's going to be this pop-up that shows up asking if you'd like our emails. You can click the Yes to Mary and Blake emails. That's just like general updates that we'll send every once in a while, but also click the Harry Potter one. That way I will email you when we have new episodes. You can stay in the know, and if we have any live episodes, we'll let you know about that as well. We want to thank you so much.
All right, everybody, thank you very, very much. Check us out, Mary and Blake, on all the social media, and that's about it.
Can I just give a shout out?
Sure.
We have Miss Potter, who wrote on Apple Podcast the best Harry Potter podcast ever. I first found the Potterverse when I had just finished the series as an 8-year-old. Yep. And fell in love with it. She found us, the Potterverse, as an 8-year-old.
Wow.
I have been listening for the past 3 years, catching up on the episodes. I was so sad when Mary and Blake stopped recording for a while, but literally whooped with joy when I caught up with their podcast one day and saw new episodes. Aww. I'm completely caught up now and always on the edge of my seat waiting for new episodes. I'm an 11-year-old Ravenclaw and love listening to podcasts about Harry Potter. Mary and Blake are so funny and wonderful podcasters. It's literally the best Harry Potter podcast I've ever listened to. I recommend this podcast to Harry Potter fans of all ages, as the podcast is kid-friendly. Just one thing, make sure you read all 7 books, as we have lots of spoilers. And her favorite part is a different perspective. So don't you worry, Miss Potter. We will have that.
You're going to have to tell us what Luna thought, because she's a Ravenclaw.
She is a Ravenclaw. That's what I want to hear from. Yes. I want to hear from her.
All right, cool. All right.
Thank you.
Music's over. We got to go.
My name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
You've been mischief managed. All right, bye. That's what we say.